Dash number 17370, Gaspar Arajanyan, reel 3.
Arajanyan, reel 3.
So this Qadi came to visit us in the house, and he said, now the Arabs of Tiberias feel that they have an Arab judge here. I said, what do you mean? I'm not Arab. And my predecessor was an Arab and a Muslim. He said, no. They were not getting justice under him. Now they feel that they are in safe hands. So it's all right. It's kind of you. anyhow, things were fairly quiet. But, soon after November 1947, when the United Nations passed the resolution for partition of Palestine, troubles broke out in various parts of the country. Of course, the Arabs were not satisfied with it. But Tiberias continued to be quiet. Tiberias was a town where Jews and Arabs had lived together for centuries. Mm-hmm. And most of the original Jewish inhabitants of Tiberias were from Arab countries. They spoke Arabic among themselves. They played Arabic music. Yes. And they were against the use of the Hebrew language for everyday purposes because they considered that to be profanation of a sacred tongue. But not the newcomers, not the new generations of those old people. And so they were quite happy with the Arab inhabitants of Tiberias, and there was peace until others started coming in gradually. So for several months, the rest of the country was deteriorating. It was fighting here and there, shootings, bombs here and there, Arabs attacking, Jews attacking. But Tiberias was quiet until one day, all of a sudden, we heard shooting, machine guns, explosions, and we didn't know what was happening, so we stayed at home, and because we could hear shooting from both sides of the house, and we were afraid that we might be caught in between the two, so we put the mattresses on the floor, and he lied down on the mattresses when the shooting was on. And this went on for a couple of, about 3 days, I think, until one day the Arab and Jewish leaders got together and decided to stop the shooting. And I remember they went around the town and telling everybody that it was peaceful now. But once it started, there was fear, I suppose. And we noticed that Arabs who were living in predominantly Jewish part of the town started moving away. And Jews from the Arab part started moving to the Jewish side. So it became some sort of partition. And The main road down into Tiberias was the dividing line became the dividing line between the Arab on one side and the Jewish house on another side, and we the house we were living in happened to be on the Jewish side. So one day I was in town. And an Arab approached me and greeted me, and then he said, you know, now you are living in the Jewish part of the town. I think you should move to our side. This was something I didn't want to do because I had been neutral all the time and I wanted to continue that. So what do? I thought of moving into the police building, which has flats, a number of flats inside the building. So I went and saw the chief of police, Mr. Thompson, and asked him whether I could do that. He said, yes, you can move, but not the family, I'm afraid. He said, we have instructions that no family should be. Well, in that case, what I thought of sending the family to Haifa, Ashley's parents, but it was difficult to travel because there was a lot of trouble on the way between Tiberias and Haifa. So the next thing I could do was to send them to Jordan, to my sister, where my sister lived. I told Mr. Thompson, he said, yes, you provide me with the escort, and that will be all right. So this is what we did, and we took some of our belongings. We put them in the house of the minister of the Church of Scotland. It's a minister of the Church of Scotland. He had a house next to the Scottish Mission Hospital in Tiberias. We were very good friends with them. So we agreed to keep these things there. And Astrid and the girls went to Amman with a friend whose family had already gone to Amman. He was going there himself. So he took them. And police escort was provided with armored cars, one in front of one behind. They were escorted up until the Jordanian border. So I moved up to the police building. I shared the flat with the district officer. He had sent his family to the village in Palestine, up in the north. So this is what went on, and then it was quiet. I mean, there was no trouble, there was no shooting. Until one morning, all of a sudden, when I was in the court, we heard shooting again. And it turned out that the Arab leaders, when they met the Jewish leaders and agreed on a ceasefire, it was agreed that no matter what happens outside the boundaries of the municipality of Tiberias, the town itself would remain quiet. It would not be influenced by anything happening outside the municipal boundaries. So when this shooting broke out, we started asking what had happened all of a sudden. Apparently, what happened was that earlier in the day, somebody had gone to a Jewish shopkeeper in town and asked him whether he would buy black market sugar, because sugar was scarce and it was rationed still. The man said, yes, all right. But it was all hush-hush and a secret. It was agreed that they would meet just outside the town, Tiberias, where the sugar will be delivered and he will pay. So the man and his son, I think, was with him, went up in with a car just outside the municipal boundaries on the way to Nazareth. But as soon as they reached there, somebody was hiding behind the bushes and shot and killed him. And Then an army, a British army jeep was coming down that road shortly afterwards, and they saw the dead bodies and took the dead bodies to the hospital north of Tiberias, which was inside the municipal boundaries. So it seems that some Jews saw the bodies there outside the Jewish hospital there. They went down to the town and said, well, two Jews were killed near the hospital. And they started shutting their shops, and anybody who had a firearm and took it out, and they started shooting, and that's how it started. And it went on for quite some time. And one day somebody came, and Mr. Thompson brought him in. Yes. In the meantime, shortly after this incident, the district officer one day packed his things and left. He said he was going to visit his father in the village. Shortly after that, a British army captain, Constant was his name, Captain Constant, he was in the hirings section, had come to Tiberias to meet the landlords of buildings that had been rented by the army. He wanted to settle accounts with them, but because the shooting was going on in town, he couldn't go down, so he asked Thompson if he could stay in the police building until things quietened. And since the district officer had gone, so there was a bedroom in my flat, so he came and joined me. We became good friends. And he was waiting for things to quieten. But every now and then we heard a shot here, a shot there. It wasn't, quiet. On the whole, it was much better, but there was still shooting going on. Then one day we saw another person coming. It was the assistant district commissioner. He was stationed in Safad, the town of Safad. He came down, and he stayed at the police building. And strangely enough, the next morning we woke up again. We heard shooting up on top of the mountain above the police building, where I know there was a very small village, a hamlet, Arab hamlet, which belonged to the Tabari family, the old inhabitants of Tiberias there. The head of the family was known as the head of the town. You know, the Tabaris, Sheikh Naif Tabari, was head of the town. He had that village up there where he had invited me once for a meal. It was a very small village, and very peaceful people were living there. We heard shooting going up there. Shortly afterwards, I noticed two men walking down the mountain coming. They came to the police station, and it was the Mukhtar, who was the headman of the village, and another member of the village. They came down, and I was there. They came and asked a British police inspector. He said, "The Jews are attacking us. We have no means of defending ourselves. Can you please send an armored car to stop the attack?" This inspector said, I was present when he said it. He said, "This is your war, you fight it." That was already the beginning of April 1948. Well, there was nothing to be done. So the two men waited there. And then shortly afterwards, we saw more people coming down the mountain. And some were covered with blood. Some of them were carrying dead babies. And it was a terrible thing. Then our new visitor, the assistant district commissioner, came out. He sent for two lorries to be brought from the army camp, two army lorries to take these people to Nazareth. And this is what happened. They were taken away.
Did that often happen, do you think, that the British stood by and let...
Well, you know, when the United Nations resolution was passed for the partition of the country, the resolution provided for the creation of a Jewish state and an Arab state. Jerusalem was to become internationalized, and a United Nations commission would come to the Palestine a few weeks or months before the end of the mandate, which the British had fixed on 15th of March of May, to take over from the British and hand over to the successor governments. But the British refused to cooperate. They said, no, we don't agree, we don't want to cooperate in the implementation of this partition resolution. But well, what I saw there was just the opposite, because they were trying to take out all the Arabs, to urge the Arabs to get out of that part of the country which was going to be part of the Jewish state.
The British were actually encouraging that?
Encouraging, helping. That was already in April. Anyhow, so this is what happened then. A few days later, my flatmate, let's say, Mr. Constant, Captain Constant, came to the flat in the evening. He said, you know, I have been to the mess. I overheard conversation, police. British police were talking to each other. They said, the Jews will be attacking tonight. Well, we sat a little. He had brought a bottle of brandy. We had a few drinks, and then we went to bed. At 2 o'clock next morning, we were awakened by sounds of shooting, bombs, explosions. We went up onto the balcony to see what was happening. I forgot to mention that the previous day, I went down to town to get our things from the Scottish minister's house, because I heard that all British subjects were to be sent to England. So that would have been included the minister. So I decided to take our things from there, and I did, and brought them up to the police building. And when I was in town, I met an Arab. He said, you know, we are in a very desperate situation. We haven't got much ammunition left. And we noticed that the Jews are preparing for some attack. Well, I felt sorry for them, but what could I do? So I went up, and this is what happened afterwards when Constant came with the news about the impending Jewish attack. So as I said, at 2 o'clock we were awakened by the sound of shooting. And I noticed that we went out and saw the bombs, explosions there, and shooting there, and so on. and police and the army personnel were watching. Nobody was trying to do anything about it. They were just watching. And I was surprised with so much shooting, but especially when I had heard from the Arabs that they had run out of ammunition. Putting up so much resistance. Later we understood that during the night, a group of some 40 Arab fighters had come into the town. They were fully armed, and it was they that they were resisting the Jewish attack. And as a result of that opposition, the Jews were not able to capture the Arab part of the town. So,
would you say there was, it seemed from what you were saying that there was quite a bit of, would you say, collusion between the British and the Jews?
Oh, yes. It was clear to me. You'll hear more about that in a minute. After daybreak, Thompson, with the commanding officer of the army unit, went down to the town, and also the assistant district commissioner, and he brought up with him one of the Arab fighters. I don't know what was in his mind, but the Arab fighter came, and I was there, I translated. He wanted to, he told Mr. Thompson, if you want to help us, he said, give me some transport so that I could get some reinforcement or get some ammunition or get more arms. Thompson was trying to persuade him to agree to evacuating the families, at least, of the Arabs from town. He said, no, if the families go, then the men will have nothing to fight for. So he refused. Thompson said, all right, I'll give you transport if you can. After that, Thompson came to me. He said, I think you should go. That was the 13th of April. I think you should go. I said, but why? First of all, I can't go. I'm responsible for the law court here, and I can't go without permission of the Chief Justice. And we couldn't get in touch with the Chief Justice because telephone communications were cut off. He said, no, you go, he said. I said, but you will be staying here until the 14th of May. I can stay. And then from here, you're supposed to go to Haifa. I'll go with you to Haifa. He said, look here. I advise you to go. If you stay here after the 16th of April, I will not be responsible for your safety. And you may not be able to rejoin your family. And I said, all right, 16th of April, mind you. All right. He said, I'll give you an escort and take you to Jordanian border. I said, all right. When I was going back to the flat to get my things, I met an Arab medical officer, Dr. Mikhail. He was the father of Hanan Ashrawi. You've heard about him. And he said, Gaspar, look here. He said, I can get a lorry from Nazareth, from the Department of Health. What do you say if we get a lorry and send our things to Amman, our furniture and our belongings? I said, forget about furniture. This is what Thompson told me. All right, I said, I'll come with you. I'll go. So I told Thompson, Dr. Mikhail wants to go. All right, if he wants to, I don't mind. So I had no car at that end, but Dr. Mikhail had a car. So in his car, we went to Amman, and Thompson provided escort again to armored cars as far as the Jordanian border, and that's how we went to Amman. When we were in Amman, we heard in the news on the 17th of April, there was another Jewish attack on Tiberias, and this time all the Arabs were evacuated. So, yeah, if you stay after the 16th, I can't be responsible for your safety.
So the British knew.
What does that tell you?
Yes, the British knew about
that. They knew about their plans. They knew. So there we were. I was in Amman. What do we do? When 14th of May approached, there was preparation. The Arabs were going to attack. My sister's son-in-law was in the army, Jordanian army. And I had nothing to do, sitting down, listening to the radio. He used to come and tell me what was happening, of course, the old secret. I saw the order of the day to the Jordanian army, sat down and read it. There was no mention of enemy, there was no mention of attack, there was no mention of... all they had to do was to go across the river Jordan, turn right, go up towards the Baysan and then Nablus and so on, and then go as far as Ramallah and stop there. No Jerusalem. And then, the fighting was going on, and later on, a delegation of Jerusalem Arabs came to see the king and begged him to send some help, because they could see that the Jews were trying to attack and capture the old city of Jerusalem. Eventually they persuaded the king, and he ordered the army to go into Jerusalem. They entered and they opposed the attacks of the Jews. And then they moved out. They started moving out towards the Jewish part of the town when they were forced at gunpoint by British officers of the Jordanian army to go back.
The Jordanian troops were?
Jordanian troops. They had British officers. So the British officers of the Jordanian army, it was known as the Arab Legion, were forced at gunpoint to go back.
By the British soldiers?
By the British army, officers of the Jordanian army. The matter went to the Security Council. Security Council ordered a ceasefire. At that time, the Jewish part of Jerusalem was surrounded by the Arabs, and the link with Tel Aviv was cut off, because there was Jordanian army there, and the Jews in Jerusalem were in a very desperate situation. I've read books later on which showed what they were doing, how things went. And the most important weapon that the Arab Legion was using was the 25-pounder guns. They were using the 25-pounder guns and they were giving them a hell of a time. When this ceasefire resolution was passed by the Security Council, one day this my sister's son-in-law had a telephone call from the palace. The king wants to see you. He was surprised. He went up. Their house was just below the palace, the Rahdan Palace. He went up and...